This one we're going to try to record as well, and hopefully we'll have it up on the resources page on the 808wave.com within maybe by the end of the week. Still going to wait for one or two mods to come in, and then we'll start introducing everybody. All right, I think since still waiting, but I think we'll have people rolling in slowly, so get started now so that we don't run over too late on the other. I don't want to run into other people's time. But so I guess I'll just get started now. I just hit the record button. I think Abby's recording too, but we got the What's My Name playing just in honor of DMX to introduce people. But still waiting for one or two people to roll in. But you know what? Let's just get started. Let me hit record on my side, and then we'll get moving. Sorry about that. All right. I think we're all set. All right. So welcome, everybody, to NFT Legal and Business Strategy. It's brought to you by the 808 Wave as part of the NFT Music Conference. This is part two of kind of a two-part series we did. We had one on Friday evening. Was based on NFT law for creators. So we're really talking about the creative side. We're not going to get too technical. We're going to really talk about what musicians and artists you know, really need to know if you're really diving into NFTs at the time. What are the use cases? What are the best practices? What are the legal issues you need to spot? What are the danger areas where you really might need to talk to an attorney? That kind of thing. So, Jeff, did you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Jeff Gandell. I run the law office Jeff Gandell based out of New York City. I have three associates that work for me and been in, have my firm going on 15 years. We work across the entertainment space, primarily in music and music digital. We do some TV and film, but music is definitely our core. We've been doing a lot of NFTs, obviously, over the last, 2 months, but also been involved with it over the last year. Currently, we have Tfue's, one of our clients has Tfue's NFT running right now. We did Rob Gronkowski and a couple others that we represented. Jesse, thanks for putting this together, and thanks for inviting me up.
Brendan, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Yes, thank you very much. My name is Brendan Maher. I am a MIT Media Laboratory alumnus from 1995 to 96. I was one of the first 150 people in the world developing virtual reality in 1993. But I've also been involved in the emerging and budding ecosystem of computational law. And the group of lawyers and geeks who have been trying for the past about 5 to 6 years to peg decentralized autonomous organizations to jurisdictions in the United States. I've been involved in the Wyoming ecosystem and their Digital Identity Act in their and on their working group for that in the law that was just passed last week, and also the DAO statute, which is in process. So we've spent a considerable amount of time in those working groups and other working groups that I was involved with, thinking about these ideas in terms of when you take all of these different technologies and you combine their implementation on blockchains, how do they go off the rails when you interact with real world contracts in real companies in physical space? Because there's a lot of places where things can go wrong. And that's all I have to say at the moment.
Great, thanks. And we've got Mermaid too, first Mermaid on the panel. See these other clubs, they talk about inclusiveness, right? We really do it at the NFT conference, not just across race and gender, sexual identity. We even include all species, minotaurs, mermaids, everything. All right, Michelle, you want to introduce yourself? Sorry, that's the that's a decent woke era joke. But that'll end the comedy portion. You want to introduce yourself, Michelle?
Yeah, so my name is Michelle. I'm part of the Mermaid Collective called Cyber Mermaid. If you go to my profile at the bottom, you'll see that. And we're working with different nonprofits to donate to them. I'm an attorney, and background is I was counsel for PayPal for 6 years. Before that, I was at eBay, Samsung, Apple, and Cisco, and a triple play company. And I decided to quit my job and do something scary, you know, and just really step into the unknown and discover unicorns and mermaids and stuff like that. So I founded a digital wallet in 2014-15. And then did a conference in 2013 with MIT Sanford Labs on virtual currency. I think about 2017 or 18, I also did one on ICO and the blockchain economy and blockchain as well, where a lot of people show up, including the SEC. And I chair that event. And then I basically as a mentor at Berkeley Blockchain Accelerator, Singularity University, and a few other accelerators. I advise a bunch of blockchain companies or mentor them as well. And I'm an artist myself, so I'm big goddesses. I was doing a lot of AR last year, an account from scratch from zero. I grew to over 130 million impression. And the reason that it's called big goddesses is not because it's narcissism, but it's because I make a bunch of goddesses augmented reality to celebrate women, because I think there should be more women and mermaids in the world to, you know, to create that, you know, one nation or one world. And I think that's what decentralization is about.
Great. Thanks, Michelle. Yeah, if you got any unicorns you could introduce me to on the early stage, man, I'm real into that. But yeah, so this, again, like I said, if you're just joining us, this is NFTs, Legal and Business Strategy. On Friday, we did NFT Law for Creators. So we'll recap that a little bit and then get started again. And my name is Jesse Halfon. I'm an attorney. In past life, I've dealt with entertainment law. I also deal with mobility technology as well. I have a newsletter devoted to NFTs, as well as a NFT guide, legal guide for creators, which is in the works. But you can sign up for both of those in the link tree in my bios. Twitter or Instagram, whatever you prefer. So since Jeff and Michelle were with us on Friday, Brendan was not. So I'm just going to kind of recap what we talked about then, and then we'll get into the kind of the smart contracts, the business side of things today. So on Friday, what we talked about was just the basic copyright, trademark, rights of publicity issues you needed to know when you were creating a work. And that analysis, as we discussed, was really no different than any work you'd create otherwise, whether that is music, clearing samples, creating original work, if it's a visual, doing a fair use analysis, and being careful of any other trademark or rights of publicity. You know, people want to put, you want to put your Ferrari outside. There's this exclusive Ferrari, you know, you get to ride, or you get some sort of ownership interest. You know, you could be getting a letter from Ferrari down the road if you do anything that kind of indicates that you're implicating them, or that you're associating your brand with them. And especially because we're talking about musicians, we're going to assume everything we're doing here is in the commercial space. So any fair use analysis you're going to have to do, any rights of publicity, anything else, you're going to have a much higher bar than if it was just a purely artistic work. And that's kind of the premise we're working on here. We're assuming people know what an NFT is. So yeah, we talked a little bit about that. We talked about joint works, making sure that you completely own the work if you're putting it on the blockchain. If it's not a work for hire, work for hire is ideal. But if it's a collaboration, if it's a joint work, audio, visual, you know, you might have dual ownership and joint ownership, which means each party has complete rights to the work. So you could post your stuff on OpenSea, someone else could put it on Nifty Gateway. If you call it exclusive, you got to have a problem. And then we talked about a little bit about contests, lotteries, sweepstakes, kind of social media, kind of derivative issues. So again, that was Friday, but we recorded that, and hopefully we'll have that up on the resources page at the808wave.com soon. So now we're going to get into kind of the commercial piece. We talked a little bit about securities and being careful for any time on the consumer side. What are issues you need to spot? You know, anytime you're talking about fractionalizing, profiting securities, derivatives, profiting off your NFTs, if the consumer is dividing up their interest, or if they're somehow sort of profiting, anything that concerns, you know, seems like it might be like more of an investment property than just a purchase of a work of art. You know, we kind of talked a little bit about security side, and we're going to dive into that now. So Michelle suggests other people I think might be interested in dividing it on the owner side. How do you divide, you know, if this is a joint work, if this is something else, how do property rights work? So I think we talked about the basics on Friday, which is like the cargo model, right? If it's you, if it's a song you and two other people made, you want to split it three ways, the profit's 33%. Say it's like a cover work, you know, Kings of Leon, you want to divide it equally between the band. That can be done on cargo. That's relatively straightforward. If you want to do anything more sophisticated, you know, I'll ask Jeff and Brandon and Michelle sort of what they think. Say, for example, I'm an artist and I want to, I don't have money to pay the artist, but, you know, I have a little bit of social media following. I want to post this NFT. It's going to be my music drop, and the cover art, the person who's going to design, it's an audio visual work. It's a visual work, like a video. I want to sell that as an NFT. I can't really pay them. So I want to basically either say, you know, I'll pay you two Ether if my record hits 10,000 sales, or, you know, we'll split the proceeds of the sale, but, you know, yours is like capped out at $5,000, say, something like that. Like we're getting into now kind of like smart contracts. Can I do that on OpenSea, Brendan? What do I need to do if I'm going to try to create a more sophisticated arrangement than what's just on cargo?
Well, I think a good place to start is with, before we get into, actually get into that, I think it's really, really important to really clear up the security aspect of this and how do we get to where we are and why there's this big explosion in NFTs at this point.
Yeah, go ahead. So, yeah, you can decide. Yeah. Yeah, if I, again, like I said, we thought you were not there on Friday, but yeah, recap is good. So go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So some things to know. We're having this big explosion with NFTs here in the United States. However, with all of this, really, it all has to do with the fact that NFTs are really a small part of the entire picture that's going on here. So what is actually really happening is that we're in this transition from Web 2 to Web 3, from the web as we know it to the decentralized web. And Europe and Asia are a decade ahead of us. And the reason why they're a decade ahead of us is because we have a lot of issues with the creation of tokens and the fact that if you create a token and they're basically a token could be anything. If a token is an asset and if it has a value that can go up, that means that there is an expectation of valuation, right? Which makes it a security. Right, and that brings in all these regulatory issues, and the Howey test and the regulatory bodies around securities. The reason why we actually are having this explosion right now is because NFTs are a legal contract implemented and expressed in code of something that already exists. And because it already exists, it is property that can be bought and sold, which generally, quote unquote, makes it not a security. But that doesn't mean it can't be, but the fact that it exists really helps a lot. Right. And these are really important things to remember. And I'm going to concede the conversation at this moment and let others talk, but I think that's a good starting point for people to know about.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I think that the main thing with the security is it's an investment that you are not actively, you know, controlling, right? The business aspects. You're a passive investor, and if you're expecting, you know, something to increase in value just based on that passive ownership of, you know, obviously the most common thing we think of is a stock, then you might have some concerns. So, I mean, I think, like you said, I think part of the problem is here. People say like an NFT can be anything, right? I got a coffee mug right in front of me. I could make an NFT of that and say, okay, yeah, here's an NFT. You own some weird ethereal digital sort of property ownership right in the mug, right? You don't own the copyright of it. You don't own anything really, any intellectual property right, if I sell a painting or anything else. But we have this relationship between like this stream of code, right? And then these
other properties that are outside really of the blockchain. So people want to talk about selling experiences as part of an NFT, right? You get the digital art like Kings of Leon, which all you get is the art, you know, right to display. But I want to add on some experience. You get to like join my Twitch concert live. You get an exclusive drop next week. You get something else down the road, right? And so we just say, yeah, okay, we need a smart contract, but it's not really that simple, right? I mean, what we really have, you know, there's got to be some sort of connective tissue between the code and, you know, this other contractual property rights that we're trying to enforce. So I don't know if Brendan, if you want to talk about like how you, and most of this comes down to, right, just a licensing agreement, right? You sign on, you buy the NBA Top Shot. When you sign on to their website, you hit I agree, just like we all do, and these user agreements are basically what dictates the terms of all our relationships, right? And I think that's probably a big part of something we need to realize, is that you might have a contractual relationship between you and the end user, your audience, but then on the top of that, there's this other end user license agreement, which you're both bound by, and obviously controls a lot of the relationships of our lives in the background. And so I wanted to kind of dive into, you know, a smart contract is only as good as it's enforceable, right? There's got to be more than just, when you're talking about a smart contract, what you're really dealing with is like consensus and closure, right? The consensus is, okay, how do we agree on what the terms are? The closure and finality is, you know, in real life, that's the law in the court. In NFTs, it's a little different. So how do I make sure these smart contracts get enforced, Brendan? Or like, what can I do to, do I put the terms of the contract in the NFT, in the metadata? What's my...
Hey, I just wanted to mention that the smart contracts as of today is very basic. And, you know, like most artists just go to use OpenSea, and there's like this little field where you basically put in your percentage for secondary sales. And on Cargo, I think someone had mentioned that the terms change. And then a lot of people now uses, there's also Mintbase, but to create a store in Mintbase costs, you know, a big chunk of money. So I think there is still a lot of things to be built around smart contracts. And I think the technology itself could be more advanced, because I don't really foresee any layperson to go out there and create a smart contract themselves, because they need to be tested and audited. So the legal terms are not there yet. The legal terms you can put in the description or in a law content, maybe, preferably the description or even a link to that on the description. That would be better, so that is known, people know about the terms before they purchase the item. Because smart contracts are so basic now, I do recommend that everyone has a contract with, you know, their collaborators, laying out what the percentage is and what time that they should be given, right? Because the fluctuation of Ethereum prices go up and down. So when you get that Ethereum and what piece, you know, those should matter. Those should be set forth in a contract. And then also, you know, make sure that you choose a smart contract, and then you trust the treasury as well, so that, you know, so that you do get the money later on. Those are some of, you know, the best strategy or best practices for now, I think, regarding just that point, because we're not there yet in terms of technology.
Yeah, you got, I think you identified a lot. I think it looks like Brandon, and I'll let Zach jump in and introduce himself. So the first point being, there's a lot of talk about what smart contracts can do in theory. But like I said, a smart contract is only as good as it can be enforced. So in terms of like what Cargo does, dividing up very simple processes, executing really basic transfers of money based on terms that you can authenticate on chain, fine. Anything where you are, you know, exiting one single platform, you know, anything that's not contained within one single platform is going to be a lot more complicated. And so I want to talk about one. Yeah. What are some of those complications? What really can you accomplish? That's what I want to talk about today. Not just Brendan, what is possible in 6 months, 6 years, 60 years. But what if an artist wants to create a smart contract today to say, OK, here,
you're going to get the right to an early release of my music or special edition, derivative work, backstage video of my, or, you know, video session of my rehearsals. You know, how can I enforce that? Because once you leave, you know, once you press I agree or I purchase on the NFT on most of these websites, you know, that's really it. You might have, that we discussed on Friday, you know, encoded or the URL to your license agreement or the terms. But that's about it. So
Michelle's exactly right. In some ways, in a lot of ways, we're not quite there yet, but and we are there in some other regards, but the way to think about framing all this is that, a lot of the smart contracts right now are based in Ethereum, because Ethereum as a blockchain was designed from the ground up to deal with smart contracts. This is where we're at right now. And the on Ethereum, the base contract or protocol, these are protocols, right? And this idea is really important because when you have software that talks to each other, you're dealing usually with APIs, which are application programming interfaces, which allow software to communicate. Protocols are lower level. They're the things like HTTP, right? And this is what these NFTs, which have a few specific protocol names, being in Ethereum, it would be the NFT is 721, ERC 721, which is the base NFT protocol name, and then ERC 1155, which is basically a container of other NFTs. And these are really simple, right? So the 721 has a few, you know, in the parlance of programming, you know, functions that are balanced, the owner of, you know, transfer to, transfer from, you know, is it approved, you know, things like this. They're really simple, right? Okay, all this other stuff, you know, will actually come out in the wash when we build other protocols on top of them that deal with these, you know, all of these other nuances of, you know, transactional interactions, you know, between parties in different industries, right? Not just in, you know, not just in art, but in all different industries. And the way to frame all this to kind of give you a better idea is that the NFT as an abstraction is an abstraction of a legal contract of ownership, but that's abstract, right? So a different blockchains are going to have different implementations, right? Some will be, you know, how do I say? The way to think about it is what's important to know at this point is that the field is rapidly developing. There are many other blockchains which are being created, which will also deal with NFTs, this idea of NFTs and smart contracts, and deal with them in different ways. And because there are other blockchains, they will deal with gas in different ways. Even on Ethereum, there are other implementations that are being developed right now, which are second layer chains, which also deal with these issues of gas. And I bring all this up just to illustrate that, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. And Michelle is correct. If you're doing anything that is, you know, more complex than some basic transfers of a certain amounts, et cetera, you know, then you're talking about hiring a developer to write a smart contract for yourself. But eventually these things will become standardized.
It is helpful. And I think that's the key takeaway here is that if you're doing anything other than something basic, like selling cover art, which again, you can look at like the Kings of Leon drop, where what you're basically selling is just the license to, you know, you obviously get the kind of digital ownership, you know, equivalent, the kind of digital equivalent of like the bragging right of ownership. That's what most NFTs, you know, and then like a license to display it in your own house is basically what you're getting. If you want to do anything more sophisticated than a cargo split 50-50 or more than that, you're going to want to, especially, you know, either hire somebody obviously to write it, in which case you're going to have a much more formal transaction with the end user, or you're going to want a separate written agreement either on email, you know, separate written agreement with your co-creator, with the end user, which is going to either be on your website, and maybe Jeff can talk about what they do with the Gronkowski release or other things. Even if it's redundant, even if you think it's redundant, even if the terms are in, if you look at like the Mendez drop NFT, where you get sort of this digital Bitmoji property, right? You can transfer elsewhere. You're going to want to do it either on your own website or, you know, with your own license agreement, and ideally have, you know, a redundant sort of written agreement outside of the blockchain. And then hopefully we can talk later on other alternatives. It doesn't always have to be on chain. There's off chain examples. And I think that's one of the geniuses of the NBA Top Shot, is that they didn't call it NFTs. They just called it a digital collectible. And I think that ended up really helping on the marketing side. So Jeff, did you want to talk a little more? Did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I was just going to add, you know, there's the assumption, and we talked about this a little on Friday night also. We all have, you know, we've all talked about what we assume. It's you taking a piece of cover art, you're making an NFT, it's a license, all that kind of stuff. And that is what everyone's shooting for. But it's so important to realize that these are still copyrights. These are still intellectual property rights. And to the extent that they're not set out how you're transferring, what restrictions, all that, no one's really sure. And so there are a lot of these sales, licenses, transfers, who knows what they are happening, that are just using the basic terms and conditions of the marketplaces. And those marketplaces don't really speak to a lot of this. And so, you know, as we talked about again on Friday, that to the extent that this is a business for you, having the people around you, accountants, lawyers, programmers that do this for a living, know what they're doing, is so important, because you could give away something you don't mean to give away. Give away a song, give away the right to your artwork that someone can do in merch, all that kind of stuff, if you're not realizing it. You know, and I think it's super important just for everyone to realize that this is not, though it is a new format, it's just a new format. I mean, I get calls from clients all the time going, oh, well, isn't it different because it's an NFT? And it's like, no, it's still someone's copyright. It's still someone's, you know, license right. And you still need to make sure that when you grant someone something, you're granting them what they want, and make sure there's a contract in place that sets forth what that is.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I'm going to just pause for a second. If you're just joining us, this is the NFT Legal and Business Strategy Room, brought to you by B808 Wave. It's part of the NFT Music Conference. This is kind of part two. We had one on Friday that we recorded, and we will put hopefully both of these sessions up for you if you miss anything, or for anybody that's not on Clubhouse, on the 808 Wave resources page. So check that out. I'm also going to let Zach and Ira introduce themselves now. We did some intros earlier, and then we'll go into a couple sort of hypotheticals about, you know, how you might want to think about smart contracts in relation to music experience.
Thanks, Jesse. Sorry for being here a little bit late. My name is Zach Smolinski. I'm an IP attorney. I've been practicing IP law for over 20 years, and I've been working on crypto-related stuff for about 5 years, and have been focused on this NFT thing for about the last few months. I mean, it's picked up really dramatically. Thanks for having me here, and glad to contribute in any way I can. Thanks, Jesse, for always hosting such educational content here on Clubhouse.
Thanks, Ed. A few months here that qualifies you as a legal NFT veteran. So we appreciate your experience. You always have really informative things to say. Ira, are you want to introduce?
Yeah, sorry also for being late. I'm hosting two rooms at the same time. So thank you, Jesse, for having us. I want to thank the 808 Wave for putting this on. It's an outstanding conference, and especially in this nascent platform. I'm a computer scientist and an attorney. I've been practicing for about 30 years. I've done everything from class actions to major copyright litigation, and also started some video game companies. And so, I'm working very heavily in NFTs. I've got two major companies that I'm working with. One's DreamView.com. The other one is Suku Infinite, S-U-K-U. And that company tries to tether NFC chips on physical goods to the NFT digital realm.
Thanks, Ira. And I have the hand hand thing open. We will get to questions in a bit. I'm not going to bring up people now just because I want to get through kind of some of the basics, and then hopefully we'll get to some Q&A. And so, yeah, what we're talking about now is you want to do something that's more than a split for the creators, like a 50-50 split. Everybody's talking about how do you add experiences? How do you add something more to, you know, for your community? And again, I think of NFTs as really about your core, your audience. Like, what, they're the ones that are going to be interested in doing this. So we're using the hypothetical where you sell the NFT, the cover art. So this is the exclusive cover art. You're going to make 100 editions. We're not going to fractalize them. They're all going to be separate. So we don't have that as a security problem. But then as part of the NFT...
Well, real quick, sorry to interrupt, but not as far as we know, right? I don't think we have
right. Any, not as far as we know, but safer than dividing it into releasing it as a single NFT that we say you own 1% of each, right? So we don't.
Jesse, can I suggest me something that I know we always say at the beginning, but in case people came in, we're up here giving our best estimates. We're up here giving theories on what's going on and our opinions on what we see. But this, none of this is legal advice to anyone in the room. No one should rely upon this. If you need legal advice, you should go to a lawyer. We're trying to educate and talk about generally what's going on. But you just said, the law and everything is changing. And then also your specific situation may change. So just please be aware of that.
Yeah, thanks.
I also want to add one other thing just for folks who are not lawyers. One of the things that gets frustrating for non-lawyers is that lawyers really need to know how to argue both sides of something. So you can give me the same case. I could do the defense side. I could do the prosecution side. And so that's the idea with what's going on with NFTs. One could argue that it's a mere contract. The other side could argue it's a security. And until courts rule on it, it's hard for us to have a bright line.
Yeah, and that applies even with established law, right? So you could have a fair use. You could ask three different copyright attorneys. They could have three different opinions on what it is. But I'll throw out a hypothetical, and you guys tell me what you think. Because we want to put, like I said, some kind of connective tissue between the digital piece of code that you're kind of is establishing the relationship between you and your audience and the outside world. So say everybody's saying I can add these experiences on. I'm basically saying I'm going to sell these 100, you know, NFTs. There's 100 different, you know, hashtag, so that's not fractionalized in the traditional sense. And I say, basically, if I hit, you know, 100,000 streams on Spotify by the end of the year, I'm going to give everybody who bought whoever owns the property in this NFT is going to get a digitally signed lyrics to that song. And they get to come to a streaming Twitch concert. Okay. So I get my website, I put it all in the terms of agreement. And I want to, I'm told all this can be done automatically. So I want some kind of API or plugin that once, you know, if it hits a million streams or top, what is it? Let's just call it a million streams. The people that own this, they get some, they're going to automatically get this signed picture of these lyrics, or maybe I'll even send it to them in an email. How would that even work? Who would I talk to? Is it possible? Is it going to be enforceable? I'll just open it up for discussion. Maybe it's too ridiculous of a hypothetical to even dive in.
Well, if someone wanted to answer. Sorry. All right, thank you, Brendan. All right, I'll tell you what I'm thinking. Obviously, all these things require a lot of pondering, but the very first thing I'm thinking about is that there's an NFT that's burned, which is the hash. It's uncertain exactly what the digital or whatever the content is that it's tethered to, but let's assume it's tethered to something that you could use like a ticket. Now, once that NFT gets into the blockchain, it can then be resold. The value of that NFT now will be related to something that's contingent. And that could fluctuate over time based upon external information on the number of likes on other social media platform. So my initial inclination is, I love the idea. Let's figure out how we could use this. Let's figure out how we could hack it, or to, you know, lawfully hack it, ethically hack it, so that we're not going to make this thing into a security with all the investment and price fluctuation and all these things that happen. But my concern is, love the idea. One person's incentive-based agreement could be another person's investment contract. And then one would look at the disclosure and odds of winning. So this thing looks like a very complicated legal thing associated with something that would be super worthy. So that's my unsatisfying heckle.
No, that's excellent. And the reason I like this is because in the business world, but in music, you know, many of these worlds, right, you have creative and marketing that come up with all these ideas they think are genius. And then they say, okay, we got to go through legal, and everybody groans. And then legal just says, no, you can't do this. You can't do this. You know, if you're a really good lawyer, especially if you're into entertainment space, what you really want your lawyer to say is, okay, tell me what you want to accomplish. Let's see if we can make this work. And so with a couple of these hypotheticals, I want to ask Brendan, Ira, okay, maybe we can't do this. Can we do an off-chain option? Can we call it a digital, you know, can we call it a sort of digital collectible? We're not going to even call it an NFT. What's our alternatives? What can we do now? So, yeah, I like the way you framed that, Ira. But if anybody else has any thoughts. I can also kind of move it on to some more complicated things. I mean, because, again, part of the problem here is settling these contracts can get anything beyond a very basic term if there's any ambiguity in the contract, which not only is it inevitable you're going to have ambiguity, sometimes you want ambiguity, right? If you have to try to create a contract where you and the other party think of every single possible contingency that could ever occur, you would never want to do it. It'd be prohibitively expensive. So we often build in ideas like you're going to make a reasonable effort to do X, or if this doesn't happen, we'll figure out, you know, a replacement alternative. And that's not something you can do on the blockchain unless you introduce something like an oracle, which is basically kind of like, think of it as like like the judge of the blockchain, I guess. And then once you're getting into an oracle, again, you're bringing to another party, making it more complex again. And so, again, you want to keep it as simple as possible if you want to offer anything beyond just digital.
Well, here's the thing, and Jesse, and this is the point that you're getting to, and it's an excellent point. These hypotheticals, the specifics of them almost don't matter. The greater proposition that you're pointing out, which is very astute, is that inherent in NFTs now and probably going forward is that art is only one element of it. It is publicity, it's performance art, it is getting attention, it's an influencer. And you know, it's similar in some ways to promoting musicians in the past, but now every artist is now basically their own Warner Records. They have to go out and do incredible things to get above the noise. You got to be like a Blau. And that's not easy. And that requires a multidisciplinary approach. And the folks who are going to succeed aren't folks who are just good musicians. They may not even win on merit if they can't even get the light of day through all the noise. And that's going to require all these other things. And that requires, frankly, perhaps complicated NFTs of the very variety that Jesse is articulating.
Yeah. And the reason I bring up, and I'm going to bring up maybe some more, I'll make the hypotheticals more and more ridiculous. I won't make them more ridiculous. The only reason I'd say this is because you're going to hear these hypotheticals in other rooms. I've heard some of these exact ones today in this conference. And you can understand why. It's exciting, obviously, to be able to basically, you know, think of these ideas, and especially from a marketer perspective. And it's something you could do, you know, on a relatively low budget, right? Creating the NFT isn't hard. Creating the smart contract, if it's just a URL or a license agreement that goes to a, you know, an HTTP website, that's doable. I'm pretty cheap. So I use the hypotheticals one so we don't get into an esoteric, boring legal, you know, lawyer discussion among lawyers, but also just because these are things people are actually, you know, bandying about. Brendan, do you want to go next, and then we'll introduce?
Sure. Yeah, very quickly. Oh, and I should say, I'm not a lawyer. I'm a computer scientist. But yeah, having said that.
Yeah, and Michelle is not a practicing lawyer. Not that we are. Again, none of this is legal advice, but I'll kind of point to that.
Yeah, rules of thumb, and everything is a security potentially, right? But this is something that is an idea, like a kind of nugget that's a stopgap method to actually get to where we're going. And it has to do with the fact, and you know, we're never going to get there fully, right? And I think Ira really hit the nail on the head, and you did. And this is one of the things that I think is very much on the mind in the people who are involved in the Wyoming ecosystem in terms of how to bridge the gap between things that are on chain and other aspects of law, right? You know, you're not going to be able to always bridge the gap. You're going to have paper contracts, right? Because not everything fits into code, because it's just assembly at the end of the day. But to get there, right, you know, how do you actually bridge the gap? And we could actually do that now, right? Because you can take text, right? And you can, if you find the right geek who knows how to do this, you can take text and you can get the hash of that text, your own paper contract, and then submit that to the blockchain. And then, you know, and then you have proof that contract, the written contract, was created at that point in time. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't solve all the problems, of course, but it actually just, you know, kind of pegs your contract that's paper at this point in time to the blockchain, so you can go back and refer to it and say, well, this is what we had on paper. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, and but before I introduce Ali, the reason I bring up this particular hypothetical, and the hypothetical, Ali, if you missed it, is I'm selling an NFT, 100 of them, not fractionalized, there's 100 different hashes, with the NFT on the license agreement on my page and embedded in the URL is, if my song gets played a million times on Spotify, I'm going to simplify it even more. I'm going to send you one ETH if it hits a million plays by the end of the year, or if it gets a million likes on YouTube. Different example, either one. The reason I do this is, one, because that, at least that's verifiable, you know, in theory, right? Because people, you know, these Ethereum contracts are all about automating, right? It's like super hyper automation. And so now with the one ETH payment, I can put that in escrow. But the reason I say 1,000 plays on Spotify, because I wondered if that makes it more like an investment in security. And since you're our security expert, Ali, I wanted to kick that one to you. And then I think Ira's going to.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that. If that type of incentivizing is would qualify as security, I don't know if that's enough for the actual holder. And it's not a fractionalized NFT. Just because they're promoting their song by it being played, I personally don't think it would fall as an investment contract. It doesn't sound like it, unless other details would be to it. And then, Brendan, to your point, I just wanted to add, when, you know, I've recently become informed of other technology out there that's able to do this. My concern is, when you have a license or a contract that is now attached to the NFT, and for, you know, future buyers or users end up purchasing the NFT and need to be bounded by the existing agreement, does that technology allow so the contract is viewed and consented to before obtaining access to the NFT? Because I think that's very important, rather than it just being stored somewhere, having access to the NFT, and then, you know, viewing the contract later at some other point.
Well, Ali, you hit the nail on the head, Ari.
In the hypothetical as given, you could put the conditions in plain text within the NFT itself, subject to conditions at this URL. And so you could probably, you know, do something like that. And but it's very inartful, especially if you start going to a different marketplace and do the secondary sale. So it's going to create all sorts of notice and consent issues along the way.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was wondering, because obviously if you're about to hit 1 million hits, or maybe you do, now the value of the NFT goes up, might get sold. How am I going to make sure that person now is on notice? And again, this is the reason I bring, the other reason I bring up this hypothetical is it incentivizes your users to promote your music, right? You're kind of, again, I'm trying to think, my mom always said I should have worked on Madison Avenue and not become a lawyer, but, right. Online social media engagement and modern marketing is about engaging your users, right? They want to feel like they are part of, you know, you, your brand, like that you are, you know,
right,
you know, together. And so sometimes I make my hypotheticals so complicated I forget the issue. Spotify could have an issue with this, right? There's something called like gating on Facebook. You can't, for example, say like my page and I'll enter you in a sweepstakes. Facebook will take that down. It's called like gating. So again,
I just wanted to say, I
want to keep it as simple as possible. The only reason I'm saying this is for best practices, if you haven't already realized, like, for people listening, you know, when you're here, you can do anything with an NFT. You know, try to think through, always think through what could possibly go wrong here or how complicated is this before you even talk to a lawyer, right? Because if you've never sold an NFT, let alone done a Twitch concert, let alone, you know, done anything like this, you have a lot more hurdles than if you have a lot of experience in that.
And just picking up, Jesse, what you're saying, you also have to look at the outside world ramifications, because as you were pointing out, you know, there are very strict and more enforceable rules on all of the DSPs, Spotify and the other DSPs, about what you can and can't do to try and drive your numbers and all that, and handling it the wrong way could get you banned for life. And so you just have to understand what you're doing in the NFT, but then also what other things in your world will interpret that to be.
As well as the marketplace terms of use. If any of these things run afoul, they'll run away from you. And now you'd be stuck having to give everybody their ether back. Remember, these are also deals that are being made with anonymous folks. So along the way, if one's not careful, you know, a 15-year-old 10,000 miles away, say in, I don't know, your favorite country, China, could be buying this and they can't use it because COVID restrictions don't let them travel or something like that. So it gets super complicated. Also, a minor really can't be bound to a contract. So all the problems that one has in the real world are magnified in the blockchain world.
Yeah, you got ahead of one of my hypotheticals already, Ira. So what can I do then to minimize that risk? Can I basically say, I'm selling this NFT, here's the experience, but in order for me to validate your identity and for us to form, for both of our purposes, you have to send, I need an email and an address and a credit card number, or maybe not a credit card number, you know, some other, at least an email. Send me an email, and that's the only way you can cash in on the other deal. Is there something I can do there? I mean, the other issue obviously is one of these, you know, OpenSea could just go down, right? If you violate a law or something goes wrong, BitCloud, any of these sites could just go down. But how do I kind of, this is what I'm getting into best practices. Should I just ditch the NFT thing, call it a digital collectible and do it all on my own site? How do I kind of make this more reliable for both of us, the consumer?
There's actually an answer to that. All right. So, you know, remembers that the more a company has to lose, the more compliance oriented they are. So NFTs are done in a continuum from OpenSea all the way up to what the NBA is doing in a walled garden. I would have to say right now that if one really wants to use NFTs, and the NFTs are not just for something like an MP3 file or art or something, you know, if it starts getting a little bit more complicated and there's conditions and something that looks like a contest or a security or whatever, then I would say a walled garden approach, doing what the NBA does with their app, making it so that, yes, you can go ahead and trade it, but it has to be under very defined circumstances and technologically controlled. So you have high quality control and everything has to go through the app, and it's not going to go out into the society generally on the blockchain. It will be a controlled blockchain. And so then you could get all that. And if everything's working within the app, it's nice because the app itself could manifest a barcode or whatever you need to get in. And the terms and conditions could always be shown as a condition precedent to everything. So I'd have to say I would marry it to a walled garden.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I'm glad you said it, Brendan. You can add some context also on top of this, but obviously that goes against at least the hardcore purists of Ethereum, right? The whole philosophy of the purist in Bitcoin is that it's decentralized, etc. But again, this is not a Bitcoin conference, or this is about musicians and how they can market their work, and they're hearing about NFTs, and everybody's like, okay, you know, you have a wide variety of people. Some people are really into tech, some people are just established musicians. They've just been grinding for years. They just want to make sure they don't lose out. And so I think, you know, I would probably second that approach. The walled garden meaning, you know, that's what like the App Store is, right? You have to be in a particular, in case people don't know the term, in a particular ecosystem. You can't go on OpenSea and buy a Top Shot, right? You have to be on the NBA's particular vendor. So that's obviously one alternative. It's not the purest, you know, Ethereum-based approach, decentralized approach, but it's an alternative, which I think people need to really think about.
I want to hear what Allie wanted to say, but I wanted to just say one thing. Ethereum is actually not really in the construct of decentralization. Ethereum is not decentralized, right? The consensus is decentralized, but we're not actually at the point where we have decentralization yet. But that's another topic. But it's important to make a distinction. Allie, what were you getting at earlier? You seem to be onto something there.
I know. I was just going back to the hypothetical and even, you know, confirming more that I didn't think it was going to be a securities because, sorry, that's my 2-year-old. It wasn't through the efforts of a third party or another party. So, but we've moved past that. So, but thank you, Brendan, for asking.
Hey, I wanted to add that when we're talking about validation and for social media, like to reach that 1 million, you know, and I'm thinking about, and I think Ira talks about like specific communities. I kind of suspect that there will be different communities forming with their own systems and rules and everything. And I think a lot of it, and it doesn't have to be the Ethereum protocol, right? From a technical perspective and best practices, when you're creating your strategy or business strategy, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, like think about your consensus layer. I basically advise a bunch of companies and they customize, you know, their protocol, thinking through a lot of these issues, using a lot of math to create those consensus layers. So for example, for Jesse's questions, right? If you require, you know, validation, you could create a community of validators and you can determine who would qualify and, you know, have them, you know, state or whatnot on it. And then, you know, when they reach 1 million, you know, then you can have a person validate that. And then, you know, the you know, package will be released, you know, per se, because the condition is met. So those are just some of the things that you can think about. And I think I agree with, you know, Brendan that, you know, I think, you know, if Ethereum is not, if the layer 2s do not continue to work, you know, we may move beyond Ethereum into a, you know, a new thing, you know, that could allow us to transact and with lower fees and with multiple collaborators more easily on the blockchain, because I think that's what we need, because it's supposed to be trustless, but now we're still depending on human treasuries. For some reason, all these platforms don't allow multiple developer collaborators more easily than they should right now. So I think that in a few months, if the layer 2 don't make things easier, and you know, I think I was talking to some technologists and I asked for not only a bridge that connects with different blockchain, but also AI that would basically detect which images are potentially a copyright or not, and also a security for you know, the artists as well, because I think there are a lot of fake accounts coming up, a lot of people copying art and the like. So I'm hoping that in a few months these things will be resolved.
So, and can either Brendan, Ira, or anybody who wants to chime in, just to the extent that peer to peer adds even more complexity to this, if it's taken off of your walled garden, or if maybe you do sell it on OpenSea with a URL to that links to the license agreement, which is on your webpage, is there anything else? Should I basically ban any certain kinds of transactions, or should I say I do offer an experience, should I say it's only the first user that can use it? If you resell it, basically the experiential portion terminates? Because, I mean, I think, Ira, you brought up this point last time, right? The whole point of the blockchain, it exists forever, right? So you want to put on some, we talked about consensus, which is who's going to decide how something gets resolved. You also need some closure or finality to these things.
Yeah. Well, the peer-to-peer thing is perhaps the biggest risk to the entire NFT paradigm today. And that's because some folks, not all, I don't think OpenSea is involved in this high risk, but some folks position themselves, these marketplaces position themselves as making money on the NFTs, but having absolutely no responsibility. So if you go through the terms of use, everyone in the world is responsible except for them, even though they're making money on it. Now, that's not completely dumb. They have got great lawyers, and they just want to position themselves as a passive conduit to the blockchain. So in reality, what happens then is that folks come there, and if it's user-generated content, the NFT gets minted. It's a hash, and it usually has, you know, a URL, and that URL goes to a central server on some marketplaces so that if it's infringing, it could be taken down later on. But on other marketplaces, it goes to an IPFS server. And that IPFS server is now the same thing as kind of BitTorrent. It's peer-to-peer. It's self-healing. If some of the IPFS servers go down, it could still does not mean the content's lost. And so that creates a problem, because if someone who's well-intentioned but wrong in guessing on fair use deposits it onto this IPFS server after it's minted and they lose, there's no way to take it down. So their damages continue to accrue, and the harm continues to accrue forever. And that is, and now if someone's not well-intentioned and they go over to Getty Images or Google Image Search and just like make small changes and then change the hash and then dump it into one of these marketplaces, now the entire IPFS server is infected. The marketplace is making money off of resales of infringing stuff. And now you have incentivized open proxies for infringement. So for me, it's hard to reconcile the situation ending up anything but bad. And yes, so you have IPFS servers that create a tremendous, tremendous risk.
Yeah, so I'll
I can speak to that too.
Go ahead, Brendan, and then we'll try to get to some questions.
Yeah, very quickly. And I wanted to just hit the point that Michelle made, which is easy to gloss over. A little bit earlier, which is really important. What she was getting at earlier when she was talking about consensus, what she was also, another framework for thinking about that, or another word for that is this whole construct of oracles, right? So you have off-chain things that, you know, they could be people, they could be machines, but basically they come to an agreement about something, right? And we have this in financial markets, right? They're, you know, they're billion-dollar companies that give consensus around different types of assets, right? What's the price of oil? Well, the price of oil, there is no one price of oil. It's multiple prices in multiple markets, and then there's this consensus that happens, right? So these ideas of oracles and consensus about the pricing of things and the quality of things and anything we have around consensus are going to be built out. It's starting right now. So that's an important part of all this, and it goes to what Ira was saying also. But
I'm going to bring up some audience. I mean, I have a few more hypotheticals. My favorite one involves the people who buy your NFT get an early release leak of all your music. But then if they transfer that you embed something in there, if they transfer it to anybody, they lose the NFT. It basically self-destructs. So you're basically testing the loyalty of them to not leak your music. That's my favorite one. But we're going to save that. We'll have to have a third another time. So I'll start bringing people up. My last hypothetical was, it's the basic NFT. They get the digital art. But on top of that, as part of it, they get tickets to your backstage access to your concert September 1st. Or video live feed to backstage. So they basically get to see you. If they can't make it, they get to see you hang out. how do I do that? Is that enforceable? What are the problems with that while I bring up other people? So I'm not, they get to come basically, you know, if you send me your email, I'm going to send you backstage pass ticket or give you this live feed, you know, whatever.
Well, probably related to that, but it's worth touching bases because I basically said something really important to think about, which is, you know, the fact that if content is put on IPFS, it's permanent, and that's true, and it's not exactly true because there's also another part of the protocol which deals with IPNS. So what we're going to see is we're going to see more robust ways of dealing with things which are immutable and things which are mutable, and these things have to happen, right? Because, you know, keys need to be rotated, and you know, and these things, none of these issues at that level in terms of you know, what's permanent and impermanent are related to NFTs. I mean, they're related to GDPR. They're related to all content and all things. And we are going to have a more robust way of dealing with these constructs of what is immutable and what is mutable, because it has to be, and we have ways of doing that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, again, I'm like, I know I hate being like the teacher who like knows the answer to the question or whatever. So, but yeah, I mean, the problem is here with that, with these quote unquote smart contracts, there's no simple way to amend them or terminate them, you know, even if there's a good reason or you want to renegotiate, because again, they're stuck there. So, you know, we've got somebody, we know we can get you tickets, but what if there's COVID outbreak and now you have to reschedule to December 1st and the user's like, I can't make it December 1st or... So again, I'm just trying to think of, you know, I want the musicians out there who are hearing, you know, you can do anything with an NFT to kind of think about things. So let me open it up I'll let Ira talk, and then I'll let Clarence, you goes next. Clarence, who I'm infinite, you know, always jealous of with the fire profile pick. I got to get a new profile pick every time I see that. Go ahead, Ira, and then I'll let.
Yeah, I would agree with that actually. All right. So we have this project that I'm working on. It's called NFTShield.com, and we're trying to create these swarm contracts. It's R&D. We've tested some things. Some folks said I can't stand it, to me, because it takes, just like you said, the decentralized network, and now we're putting stops so that people could do DMCA takedowns, or a copyright owner could look at the conduct of a downstream buyer, and if it exceeds the scope of the license, turn off their ability to use it. And so, you know, I think we could do it. I just think a lot of people aren't liking it. We may test it, but if you're interested at all, we have a landing page at NFTShield.com, and you know, we're going to probably try testing it in the near future for public use.
Great, thanks, Ira. Clarence, what's good?
What's good, Jesse? Thanks for having me up. I was, I'm interested, you know, in a lot of the talk regarding the NFT space and contracts and stuff, because a lot of the stuff in streaming hasn't even been cleared up. So, I mean, we're still dealing with stuff on my end with masters and publishing that is still, you know, being worked out. So I assume this NFT thing is going to, you know, probably take 5 to 10 years, just like the streaming thing is taking to try to start to clear things up. And I think early on with YouTube and everybody else, that, you know, streams weren't collected or even monetized early on to build the platform. I kind of see the NFT thing kind of being like the Wild West for a while, before they're able to figure anything out, because it's been this long with streaming and it we're still figuring that
out. Yeah, that's what, and I mean, obviously, we're talking about hypotheticals here. I really, when I'm in these rooms, I try to draw people into actual realistic ideas. You know, this whole thing, this, it's great, right? The self-imploding NFT that turns into a rainbow, like, that's all great, like, in theory, but I really like to talk about what are actual kind of use cases that we can do. And of course, it's going to evolve over time. It might not even be called an NFT. It might not even be on Ethereum, right? It could be, this could just be, you know, 1.0 of another technology that unlocks this kind of thing. But I think, I think that at the very minimum, what we've seen with NFTs is that it seems to be the basis for, you know, a way for artists to interact and monetize directly with their audience, which is certainly seems to be the future. And I always use the Shopify analogy. I could open up a Shopify store right now and start literally selling like lawnmowers internationally that are manufactured in one part of the world, send them to another. I could do it all from my basement, and yet I can't do that and process music royalties, right? I have a million intermediaries I have to go through to do that. So it certainly seems to be like the first layer. And so I think the most important thing is just to keep your eyes out. Whatever we say today is not only not legal advice, as Jeff said, but it's also, it could change in 6 months. It could change in a year, depending on what the SEC or FTC or Congress says. So I'll bring in another lawyer to complicate things more. Zach, how are you doing?
Yeah, thanks for that, Jesse. And there's another Zach here too.
I'll bring in.
I think I had a question. And thanks to
Clint. Oh yeah, Zach.
Oh, okay.
Hey. Oh, sorry. I don't know who. Go ahead, Zach. Zach Walensky, right. And then Zach Robin. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, to Clarence, Citizen Cope, thanks for coming into this room. I'm a fan of your music, and I see you in these spaces all the time. And so I would say that if every musician out there who's interested in this stuff took the kind of time that you're taking to sit in these rooms and learn, the discussion overall would be elevated quite a bit. Jesse, to kind of just piggyback off what you were saying, I think anyone who's entering this space right now has to kind of ask themselves, why are they doing it? And, you know, Ira made a very good point, which is that the considerations for big brands who have a lot to lose are probably going to be significantly different than the considerations for younger, smaller artists who may see this as Cope said, in sort of a Wild West scenario. But I think probably everyone on this panel would caution that categorizing something as a Wild West does not give you a legal shield against really anything. Like, I think a lot of people who played in the ICO space said, well, this is a Wild West. And then either they were or they weren't surprised when they got a summons from the SEC, right? So, and I also would say that this is part of the legal mindset, right? Is that we tend to be lawyers tend to be pretty careful. I think we have to be careful about how we advise our clients. And, you know, Cope, to just, I don't know that there's a good answer to your question, but you know, I think as you listen in to a lot of these discussions, one of the things you're saying is like the regular legal world is not disappearing because NFTs exist, but the regular legal world operates rather slowly. And we've seen a relative lack of people really getting hurt as a result of NFT issuances. And I think we'd probably have just seen the beginning of what might result. And again, I think Ira's points on this are just so good. Like, what happens if you can't take down in response to a DMCA takedown request? I mean, that's scary stuff, right? So trying not to be like too doom and gloom here, but you know, I think that this discussion highlights so many sort of attack vectors and so many dangers of this space. And if you're going to play here, I think you just need to know why you're doing it. And you need to have some expectation that there's going to be some risks that you may not be able to fully cover off.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key kind of takeaways, is that just like anything else, I mean, should you look into NFTs? Yeah, definitely. Just like you should look into TikTok, anything else. But your medium might not, your audience, depending on the age of the age range, what kind of music you're into. You know, if you're really into anime and that's something you've always been into, and this is a way to exploit, they're like, okay, like, this is an amazing new way to use this new marketplace for that digital medium. Great. But yeah, you can't, I wouldn't force it. And I think the fact that you see the really kind of smart brands out there, the Apples, you know, all the ones, they're not messing with this yet. Yeah, Pizza Hut threw out one little pizza gif as like a, you know, NFT non-fungible pizza, but that's Pizza Hut. That's kind of their brand. They're allowed to be a little more playful. So I think, yeah, there's a lot to think through there, but that's the reason I use in my hypothetical, I use the musician that has maybe 100,000 followers on YouTube or Instagram. They have some following, but not a whole lot of budget. Cause I think that might be someone who's more attracted to this. Maybe we'll end with Debbie, who's an attorney who deals with independent artists, but I just want to go in order. I want to get Zach, Robin's in. I think, oh no, we have till six. We're good.
Thanks, Jesse. And thanks for the rest of the panel. Great content. So I'm a securities attorney. And as you can imagine, what I'm trying to always figure out is, okay, how far can we take the NFT concept? At what point is it becoming a security? And having said that, you know, if I can just throw this out to the great minds up right now, you know, if there is a NFT that includes, say, royalties, I'm having a really hard time understanding how that couldn't be considered a security, because once we have any sort of cash flow stream associated with that NFT, clearly the contributor has put forth capital. There's, you know, some common enterprise, which is typically the artist producing that content. And if the contributor is expecting some revenue stream coming from it, how is it not a security?
I think it's going
to be. I think it has to be. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, actually, can I let Allie go and then Clarence?
No, I didn't. Absolutely. She should speak.
Yeah, because I think.
Also, Clarence, I'm definitely a huge fan as well. And Zach. But, you know, it's the third prong, right? It's through the efforts of a third party. And I think that's what's questionable. So if the promotion is being done by what would be seen in this case as the investors themselves, that's not necessarily a third party. So it doesn't satisfy that third prong. The SEC just released some opinions about a week ago on additional, you know, opinions or areas that you have to take into consideration for digital assets. And it's pretty complex, but in the long run, it's pretty much, you know, how are you presenting the sell itself, right? Are you presenting it as an actual interest in the NFTs, not the NFTs, but an interest in the sell itself? I also want to say, you know, everyone's kind of talking about regulation. Everyone's freaked out about this. This is a Wild West. But I think regulators are well aware, at least the SEC is aware of this as well, that it's very obscure. The SEC commissioner just last week announced that they're considering a safe harbor to be applied to new crypto that are issuing tokens to allow them to kind of prove that they're can operate in a decentralized manner and don't fall under the preview of the SEC. So whether or not they allow that, I think it will pass, but that should be interesting. And I think that should also give an opportunity to kind of get all the clarity and everything kind of set in place for these bigger players or bigger brands to then step in and know that you know, the layout is at least more founded.
That's yeah, there's going to be a lot of tension, I think, between this whole decentralized, you know, purists, and then other people are going to which is, I think, attractive on the sell side, but for if you're the consumer, it's nice to have, you know, FDIC insurance. You know, having even if your bank goes under, you're still guaranteed a check from the government. Like a lot of these things, it's kind of nice to have centralized authority to have your back. And I think we're not going to see anything. The real, real, real attraction in these rooms, as you'll hear, is that people want their own royalties, right? They just want to send the middle finger emoji to BMI and ASCAP, and they want to get. They've been getting ripped off for years. They want to get their fair share of their money. They want royalties, but you know, I hate to break it to people, but this isn't, you know, it's probably not going to happen until either the music industry or some alternative, right? Like the Stripe, Stripe, which Stripe was to MasterCard and Visa. Stripe came in and they're the biggest game in town now in terms of financial rails, but they're still sort of, you know, a regulated industry. And I think it's going to be hard to really do the royalty thing without some official people, because if to get your money, if you lose all your royalties because you lost those stupid 12 words in a row that you need to write down and supposedly store under your bed to keep your MetaMask account or whatever, you know, that that's not going to fly for most people, let alone like, you know, my mom and dad. So let me bring in Matthew and then we'll go to Debbie and maybe have a round table.
Hey guys. Thanks for having me. And I appreciated that answer too. Interesting to hear what Ali had to say about that upcoming potential of a safe Harbor, I think you called it, because my question kind of revolves around the same thing. So I'm an artist playing in the space, and I guess I wanted to ask not a hypothetical, but a true use case, and also see how it relates to these regulatory, I guess, Wild West questions. And then in the more tangential kind of macro way, which you kind of touched on, but I'll poke at it further, is like, are we going to be constantly trying to circumvent this thing called, you know, the, like, with these security definitions, or will the do you see a future where, like, this NFT conversation tries to, in a sense, like, push right through it and kind of redefine what that means to allow kind of communities to come together and, like, profit together as a community rather than going to these through these more centralized ways. But yeah, the practical kind of use case I'm talking about, which I could actually do today with through a no code platform, is basically crowdfund for an NFT, for the creation of a future NFT, and basically issue tokens that represent a percentage of that future NFT, and selling that NFT moves those proceeds into a treasury that those tokens reflect. Does that completely fly in the face of what the SEC doesn't want me to do?
Pretty much.
No. So, all right, let's separate this out. And I want to pay some respect to Zach's question as well as yours, Matthew. Let me keep this really simple. This is a consumer protection issue. This is an issue where you got to give folks a whole bunch of disclosures and get their informed consent. And what you describe, Matthew, is actually closer to getting people's informed consent, because you're off chain for a large part of the ability to do that. You can have click-throughs, you could be on a central server, you could sort of organize things, you can see if they're sophisticated investors, you could do KYC, ALM, anything that you want to do when you're on that central server. But if you start going off into the wild and don't use a walled garden, and you're not on central servers, and you have smart contracts which divvy up royalties, you're now basically in no longer really, you're turning consumers into B2B. They're not B2C, they're B2B. And some court may say they're B2C, and they may not be getting the informed consent, and they may be taking risks. And then you're gonna have enterprising class action attorneys involved who get a contingency fee. And the wealthier the folks are on the other end, the more likely it is they're going to draw a crowd of these lawyers for some sort of securities federal lawsuit. And so the whole thing could go south really quickly, because it's going to look and smell, at least from a plaintiff's lawyer, like a security with great risk and crap informed consent. Now, having said all that, as a computer scientist, I love it. But as a lawyer, I hate it. And so I'm walking around, I can't decide whether to hug folks or yell at them. So that's my candid view.
I agree with Ira.
Go ahead.
I agree with Ira. You know, and this is not legal advice. It just sounds like it may be potentially a security. And you should definitely consult an attorney here or somewhere else to help you with that before you structure your tokenomics, and also, you know, your blockchain and your distribution of the coins, and you know, before you even start, that may help.
I could add to this conversation.
Go ahead.
If I may. Yeah. So these are the exact issues that those of us that were involved in trying to peg decentralized autonomous organizations or any organization to jurisdiction, right? Because you have the case where if you have a LLC, and that LLC, you know, basically has, you know, 10,000, 1,000 members, right? You know, okay. Then what you're doing is you're approaching upon the issue of those members being part of an organization. But if they're not making every little individual decision, then there's some central group of people that are making decisions, because it's the decision making is not fully decentralized. And then you have the case where you kind of fly in the face of the Investment Advisors Act, right? So there's this whole thing where we're with an LLC and with decentralized autonomous organizations, this idea of control and who has what, how much information is really, really important. So one of the issues that comes into play in all this is the thing that you're offering, is that an entity? Are we talking about an entity, a community, and an entity, and you're offering a token based on what the expected value of that entity? Or is that a token just for governance, right? Or is it a token specifically for a thing, such as an NFT, something which exists? So now we can begin to understand why this idea of an NFT as it relates to an object of something that already exists is really important to distinguish itself from an entity which can be ownership of a security in an entity, right? So I hope that helps.
Also, I'm a co-founder of the Governance Research Institute. We do research on governance and e-governance and blockchain. We had a conference last year on December 8th on blockchain and DAOs and e-governance. You might want to check that. That conference, 6 hours, is on YouTube. And you know, we talk about things like that. So I know that there's certain DAOs here, like Pisa DAOs and Wrench DAO. The Wrench DAO doesn't have tokens. It's just a community that makes wrench art. I'm part of that. And they do good things. They donate it to the community. And Pisa DAOs, they basically, you know, sells Pisa art, you know, and then there's, you know, DAOs, you know, that they have governance tokens, they have a blockchain, and they have a community that basically make decisions. They submit proposals and they vote on that. And those are jurisdictions, like Brendan said, is a big part of that. Most of them are basically incorporated outside of the US with members, and their investors are also outside of the US, you know, because of regulation. So you might just really go through the 6 hours and see if any of the information there is helpful, and, you know, also consult an attorney.
Yeah, I can also provide you with some information. That's one reason regarding SEC.
I want to let people get a chance to say what they the moderator say, you know, what's best to contact them for. But let me bring in Debbie to bring this full circle, then we'll go to Clarence, and I'll wrap after that. Debbie represents independent artists, so I want to hear.
Hi, evening. Thank you, Jesse, and I think that the questions were great. I think some of the moderators are even greater. And the answers were very, very informative. I think as attorneys, we are overly cautious and we look at everything through a legal perspective and probably want to take as little risk as possible. I knew nothing about NFTs, and here I am on Clubhouse and wondering about smart contracts. And I tried to do a deep dive and I wrote like a 30-page guide on NFTs. And this is a very basic thing, not nearly at the level that some of you are talking about. But even in my own research, it gave me lots of pause for caution. And I think that's everything that I keep hearing repeated here over and over. I think this is in its infancy. I think it will grow. I think there's great things about blockchain. And I think, you know, if you're working on a private blockchain, maybe even better. But I think before anybody, like, look before you leap, try to read up. I wrote a blog about it. I'm sure there's plenty of resources out there, but I think you have to, it's not as simple as it's made to sound. That's what I want to add to this conversation. You should at least try to understand that there is no quick way to get rich, and there's a lot of people in the middle here. I know that they say that NFTs, it's direct. No, you have to pay you got to pay for the currency, you got to pay the exchange, you got to pay for your wallet, you got to pay to mint it. So there's lots of people who are taking a piece of the pie, not that dissimilar from the music business. So make sure that you at least understand the tenets of this before you get involved. Because again, if everybody could get rich easily, everybody would be rich.
Yeah, I think that's been the theme here, is that, and that's always my advice. Keep, you know, when it comes to creating the content, make sure it's original content or people you know and trust. And when it comes to, if you do want to add any experiential layer, if it's going to be a live Instagram stream, make sure you've done that in the past in the analog world. Don't do anything for NFTs or create some new thing that you just heard about without having, you know, play to your core competencies, basically. So let me go. I know Clarence was trying to get a word in, and then we'll I'll let people go around one last time.
Hey, Debbie, that was great. I think that makes a lot of sense. There's still going to be a lot of middlemen in this, even the platforms and the people that the agencies that are going to help the artists that are going to build in this space. I just wanted to, you know, basically say the reason I'm in this is kind of about being accountable as an artist. And I think, you know, over the years, artists haven't been fully accountable in all of the things, a lot of times due to leverage and other reasons. A lot of times, you know, artists are young when they first go into signing contracts, as I was when I first got into this. But I also own master recordings and my publishing, so this is an interesting space for me where I can possibly maneuver some of that stuff in a way that will be a little bit more direct, and with the collectibles becoming more popular. I also wanted to add on the SEC thing that, you know, Blau is in a lot of, like, really smart, not just him, but other people, really smart people with a lot of money are looking to do the right, or go through the process of fractionalizing this, not unlike collectibles.com does for collectible baseball cards, where people come in and invest in that card. Also, I just wanted to say, it seems like a lot of the royalty stuff on a high level between, you know, is stuff with managers that want a piece of the royalty or this and that. I do think that a lot of artists haven't come in and learned about it, and it's taken me like 8 weeks to even just get like an inch of knowledge out of this whole thing, because I was so unfamiliar with crypto, MetaMask, VR, virtual reality, any of these terms. And I also just wanted to say that Verito, an artist, yesterday or 2 days ago released a record that she had a percentage of the NFT, depending on how much money was made, would go back as a master percentage on this song. So she's done it. She admitted that she kind of tested the waters of the SEC, and it could be, I mean, I would think it would be a security in that sense, but there is actually, she did it. And not in my statement about the Wild West, just to clear that up, wasn't that anybody could do anything. I think artists have to take accountability for what they own and only do that. But just like with Uber, they didn't necessarily go through the right channels with the taxi commissions, and there was a lot of law surrounding that. So I think a lot of these platforms are maybe taking the same approach because it's a tech situation. But Verito did do this already, I think 2 days ago, and I didn't know if anyone had any knowledge or thoughts on that.
I'll let people, I just want to make sure I get everybody. We got other rooms coming up at 6. Victoria's in the audience. We got some great people here. So I'll go over probably a little bit just with the final introductions and wrap up, and make sure everybody gets a chance to tell you what they can, because these people not only gave their time, but many of them will respond to DMs. Obviously, don't send them your music, and don't ask for free legal advice. But if you have real questions, these are the best, brightest, and boldest minds. I had a lot of people ask me who wanted to be on this panel, and I chose people that were really, really experts in the field. So, you know, we've got them all here. And then there's more people in the audience, Esther, Ash, Deborah, that you should all follow. So I'll leave it open a little bit. I'm going to play some X again. We're right here because we're not going anywhere, Abby. But I'm going to let people introduce themselves to just basically say goodbye, final introduction. And I'm Jesse Halfon. You can reach me in my DMs, Instagram, or Twitter. I've got a newsletter. I've got also a guide on NFTs, and then I'll just go down the line. Jeff, Brendan, what should people contact you for, if anything?
Hi. So I, like I said, I'm primarily a music lawyer. Do work in the space, in the NFT space, some of the other digital space as well. So we represent artists, producers, labels, promoters across the board. So anything in the music space, anything in TV and film, we do some. Anything in the digital space, we do celebrities as well as music people. So feel free to reach out to me. Please follow me on, as well as not only me, but everyone on the panel on here on Clubhouse, on Instagram, on Twitter. My website is in my bio. My email is in my bio. Please feel free to reach out. And, and though Jesse said don't send music, as I said, I'm primarily a music lawyer. So feel free to all send me your music. I'm always looking for great new music. I love helping build young artists up and to help take them next level. So
broke the mold there, Jeff.
You know what? I'm always short on music, and I've been lucky enough to grow so many great artists over the years. And I mean, everything from I met one artist is when he was my trainer at the gym. Never know when you're going to get the next great thing. So always want to hear new stuff. And, it's just always inspiring to hear what these great, talented artists can make. And that's why, at least for me, and I think probably a lot of people got into this. So always want to hear what people are doing.
Thanks, Brent. Thanks, Jeff. Brendan, you'll see Brendan in many more rooms if you're on Clubhouse. But Brendan, anything you want to plug or anything else?
I'm on Telegram. It's in my bio, as well as Instagram, BitwiseB on Instagram, and Brendan CM on Telegram. I hope I was helpful. It's a very interesting space. There's a lot of excitement.
Definitely. We'll be looking forward to listening to what you have to say in rooms down the future. Michelle?
Yeah, so my name is Michelle. I'm an artist. I'm also a developer. I've been developing smart contracts this year. I do a lot of creative coding as well. I'm also a lawyer, but I don't take new clients anymore. So I would refer you to different lawyers. I have a show called Laptop Radio at Stanford University, KZSU Stanford. And I've been talking about blockchain and crypto since 2017 or 16. So you can hear a lot of interviews with security lawyers and other lawyers on crypto and blockchain and tokenization as well. And then I also wrote a token guide on my Medium. You can find that. And if you're running a room and you need female speakers, I did a 2000 thought leaders of crypto with all female people ready to speak at your event, because I don't like going to event with no female speakers. And you can reach out to me for anything. Hopefully I can guide you or point you to the right people. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. Yeah, no mantles here. Oh, I never have panels with less than 50% women, but I had two drop out today. So we were a little bit under the average. Go ahead, Zach.
Thank you, Jesse. And so my name is Zach Smolinski. I'm an IP attorney with around 20 years of experience in technology law. Tech law is my focus. I'm a patent attorney, and I tweet on these issues. If you want to check me out on Twitter, my pinned tweet is an article about NFT use for brands that I wrote with the help of other very good attorneys in the space. And I just want to point to the multidisciplinary nature of this panel and of the space in general. And thanks, Jesse, for hosting. Thanks to the 808 Wave for putting up such interesting and thorough content.
Allie?
Hi, my name's Allie. I'm based in New York. I started off in investment banking, worked for Goldman Sachs, Crédit Agricole, then transitioned into law, starting off as a securities attorney, and now advise on financial technology and digital finance. And again, great job, Jesse. Thank you so much for inviting me and 808 for holding this conference.
Go ahead, Ira, if you got anything else you want to add.
I'm a lawyer. I've been doing this for about 30 years, a computer scientist. I sit at the convergence between tech and Hollywood and entertainment. Right now, if folks are interested in collectibles or tethering album covers or almost anything physical to the blockchain and an NFT, you could reach out to me. We can try hooking you up. There's a company called Siku Infinite that I'm affiliated with, and also Dreamview.com, which I own part of. I'm also an attorney, so God forbid anybody gets sued. I have litigated a lot of cases in this area.
Debbie, you want to go? And if anybody else has anything to plug, but Debbie, if you want to say...
Yes, I
introduce yourself.
Need to bow down to all the people above me because you are all a lot smarter than me, and I appreciate all of you. I am an entertainment attorney in the music space. I represent indie artists, labels, and managers, and I teach an online course. It's really a primer, and I also wrote an instruction guide on this area, but it's a primer. And Ira, I'm already following you. Zach, I already went to read your blog. Jesse, I'm asking you for yours. And Jeff, you already know I love you. And Ali, I'm in New York. We should hook up. So, and Michelle, I don't have a clue who you are, but I'm going to do a deep dive now because you sound like you know a lot about this space. And I think this space is very tricky. And I think a lot of artists have no clue. Like, I had no clue, and now I probably can talk about it, but the fact is it's very tricky, and people need to understand that it's not just as simple as they may hear about it, especially in some of the rooms on Clubhouse. You really have to buyer beware. And yes, it is the Wild Wild West. I actually even wrote those words in my guide. So I agree.
That's right.
Citizen.
Yeah, so, well, a lot of people ended up in the crossfire in the Wild West. So be careful out there. If you have any more questions that we didn't get to, you can send them to my DMs. I'll try to get back to you, or maybe we'll try to put them together in the 808 Wave resource page again. Both this and our other panel from Friday were recorded. So assuming everything went smoothly and I didn't say anything too that could get me in trouble or too irresponsible, then we'll put those up on the resource page again. This is the NFT Legal and Business Strategy Room from the 808 Wave, part of the NFT Music Conference. Thanks to everybody that joined. And go check out the 808wave.com for, you know, our resources and what's coming next. Thanks again, everybody, for your time.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, Jesse, for holding it.
Thank you.